The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
We're looking ahead this week on the programme to the new Lincolnshire Young Farmers Year with re-elected Chair Rosie Finney.
So it's actually our 50th year coming up, just going into it. So we're hoping to have the biggest and best year we possibly can.
To the biggest village show in the country.
We have our main livestock show on the Sunday and we've got our biggest ever entry of sheep and cattle.
And Farm Safety Week starts tomorrow.
We can't make the industry 100% risk-free, but we can minimise them. But we're not.
Plus, of course, crop, livestock and grain market reports, important and timely agronomy advice and the week's farming weather.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Hello, hope you've had a good week. Bit of warm sunshine at last. Harvest gets into gear with a busy few weeks ahead and we're hoping for suitable weather. This is the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, we're being reminded to check that adequate insurance is in place for seasonal farm workers and to ensure that proper training is given and recorded. Big claims and fines could result if not. Farmers are encouraged to start winter slurry storage plans now after the wet spring, which has put pressure on stores. The Environment Agency is offering help and advice with their Winter Ready campaign. Full details on their website. A real-time heat stress tracker has been introduced for livestock farmers, and it's free. It's the Temperature Humidity Index tool from Galebreaker, aiming to mitigate heat stress risk, better for cows, better for farm productivity. And farming's been named as the most valued profession after nursing, according to a survey of 2,000 adults carried out by the NFU. Farmer confidence may not be high, as we know, but it seems the public do appreciate and value the effort farmers make, despite adversity, to put climate-friendly, nutritious food on their plates. So as the current season draws to a close, let's look forward this week. Lincolnshire Young Farmers held their AGM a few days ago. Congratulations to Rosie Finney, re-elected as chair for a second year.
Yes, thank you very much. No, it really exciting. Glad to have, had the trust of the members to have another go. It was a bit of a close competition. A little bit scary when the votes are getting counted, but yeah, real honour and a privilege.
And you've now got two vice chairmen.
Yes, so one of my vice chairs is Jack, who I had with me last year, and we've got a new chairman, Rosie Ray. So there's two Rosies in power now, so could be confusing.
Now, I can see because you've got a shirt on that says your home club, but just tell us which is your home club. How long have you been there? What have you done there?
So my home club is Horncastle YFC, although I now live up in Scunthorpe. So I've been a member of Horncastle since I was 14. So that's about 9 years ago. At club level, I've given everything a go, all the roles, being club chair, coming out of COVID, and then sort of moved up to county and now sort of national roles as well. So given everything a go.
So what got you into Young Farmers, first of all? What made you join?
Each sort of October, we do what we call New Members Month. And, you know, my parents, grandparents have been young farmers. And I hadn't really thought about joining until we had Horncastle had a new members night. And a friend of mine said, you know, come along with me, see what it's like. And went along to that. And I've not looked back since. So, that was 9 years ago in September coming.
Now, we often say you don't have to be a young farmer to be a young farmer. And you're a case in point, really. You're not actually a farmer, are you?
No, in the sort of farming world, but not your typical farmer that you'd expect. So, it's certainly true. You do not have to be a farmer to be a young farmer. You just, need to have an interest in making new friends in the area, get to know a bit about, rural industries and farming. But it's more than just farming and tractors.
So what do you do then?
So I am assistant manager of a chicken hatchery. So we are supplying chicken farms, but the sort of side of the industry that you've probably not heard of as much. And we produce up to 1.4 million chicks per week.
I still can't wrap my head around that number. That is an awful lot of chicks, isn't it? Let's face it. How does it work then? There are lots of individual clubs in Lincolnshire. Yet we have Lincolnshire Young Farmers that you are chair of. What's the relationship between the clubs and the county?
So, yeah, we have 16 clubs up and down the county, from as far north as Brigg all the way down to Stamford. Now we've got a new club just north of Grantham as well at Long Bennington. As a county, everyone in each club feeds into to the county. So we have what we call an executive committee, which is made up of reps from each club. So they can feed forward their ideas of what they want us to run as a county. So be that competitions, social events, trips, you know, travel opportunities. And we also act as that middle sort of point between, you know, the general membership and the national federation that sits above us. So we're kind of a bit of the middleman, but helping members to get the most out of young farmers that they can.
Now, you mentioned quite a few things there, like events and visits and so on. What have you got planned for the year about to start?
Oh, so it's actually our 50th year coming up, just going into it. So we're hoping to have a, you know, the biggest and best year we possibly can. A lot of emphasis this year on fundraising. So I've got some big targets for fundraising that I am going to have to keep under my hat for now. But we're holding a 50th anniversary ball, which will be sort of February, March time, along with our normal sort of social events calendar, a bigger rally than we've certainly had before as well. Just all things to sort of celebrate 50 years of Lincolnshire Young Farmers.
Excellent. It's going to be a busy year again, by the sound of it, isn't it? Is it ever not a busy year?
It's always busy with young farmers.
And just remind us then, what are the sort of age limits, lower and upper, and where does somebody go to find out more?
So age limits depend on club, but as a whole, we tend to be 10 to 28 years old, subject to which club you're looking at. To find out more information, you could find us on the Lincs YFC website. So that's linksyfc.org.uk, I believe. We're also across all social medias. So Facebook, each club will have its own page. So if you can't find your own club, message us at Lincolnshire and we can sort of direct you to the right place.
And thinking about that, if somebody, you mentioned that you've got a new members month coming up in a couple of months' time. If somebody's thinking, yeah, sounds like my kind of thing, can they just get in touch with a club, or do they have to wait until the new members month?
No, we will accept people any time of the year. I mean, at the minute, we're in a bit of a lull. Obviously, as harvest is just beginning, we tend to have a few weeks off normal YFC activity so that everyone's busy, you know, out in the fields. But come September, anyone's welcome to join at any point. So if you want to get involved, just, you know, get in touch with us and we can put you in contact with the right place.
All right, Rosie, well, congratulations again for your second year as chair of Lincolnshire Young Farmers. May you have a nice, busy, but incredibly successful second year.
Thank you very much. I hope so.
Coming up next weekend, after the Lincolnshire Show, one of the big events of the year in the county calendar, one of my favourites, the biggest village show in the country. Heckington Show director Charles Pinchbeck, a big anniversary this year.
It is, yes. I mean, the show tradition goes back well over a century in the village, and it was run with a paid general secretary and all the work done by contractors. Yeah, and that was the way that it was done. And that that thrived actually after the war for a few years, but then sort of fizzled out in 1960. And the village were quite unhappy about that actually, because they absolutely loved their show. And in true sort of community empowerment style, they decided they'd get this show going again. 1964, a one-day flower show in the village hall.
And I was going to say, it's rather grown, hasn't it, in those
years? Just a little,
yes.
No, it has, yeah, and it's been, to be fair, there was a bit of a pattern to follow from the previous shows, but it's actually just kept, got back to that within 2 or 3 years and has just kept going. And now it's, we say it's the biggest village show in the country. It's not two jars of jam instead of one. It's a county show with a real village show vibe, which is just wonderful. Yeah.
How do we define whether it's a village show? Is there a point when it grows to such an extent that it's really no longer a village show?
I think a lot about this stuff. Technically, it is in a village, so therefore it is a village show. But actually, if it's going to have any value for the village and actually have continue to thrive, it needs to keep that village show feel. I saw this in a show in the Dales in Northumberland one autumn. I watched eight children for a village do every conceivable race in the pouring rain. And I thought, that is what is a village show about. And my people ask me, what's the thing I'm looking forward to? It's, yeah, I love the big entertainment and all that sort of stuff. But Saturday morning, the children from the village having their moments in front of their families and their grandparents and their aunts and uncles and everything like that is what we are about. And that helps keep us grounded and keep it proper village, if we can say it like that.
It's certainly big in terms of numbers. I mean, by that, I mean numbers of visitors, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we have, in a normal year, we can look forward to around 30,000 people coming through the gate, which is getting on for 10 times the population of the village. Yeah, which is just brilliant. And so, yeah, if you look at show attendances, which to put a bit of a dark art, we're in about the top 25 in the country. Yeah, and number one is the Royal Welsh. Yeah, and then you go down Royal Norfolk, Royal Cornwall, Lincoln, all those sorts of things. And very quickly, you get to Heckington. So we, in football terms, we're sort of borderline Premier League.
Amazing, really, isn't it? And long may it continue, obviously. So what have we got lined up for us this year?
There's the obvious new headline stuff. So I think I'm really looking forward to Dancing Diggers. I love it. Listening to the audience. They're the children who've seen Bob the Builder do this stuff. They're the dads and the uncles are going, I cannot believe you can do that with a backhoe. Yeah, it appeals at all those different levels. It's absolutely brilliant. That Sunday, we're really, really looking forward to that. Saturday, actually, the thing I really love is the pony scurry, the little four-wheel carts. They drive around it. In our ring, that is spectacular because, yeah, they're coming towards you at 30 miles an hour at eye level. It's very, very impressive. Yeah, Saturday night, the firework concert. In COVID, we thought if we're only going to do one thing, we're just going to do the firework concert because it's a thing that the whole village loves, brings everybody together. The atmosphere and the whole vibe is, it's family party. It's just absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
And what have we got musically on the Saturday evening this year?
We have our house band, which is a Sleaford concert band. It is the biggest gig of their year, which is brilliant. We have our tribute act, which is Gladness, which of course is a Madness thing. And that's just, accessible is a bit of a modern word really, but actually, yeah, everybody knows a couple of their songs and really enjoys them, which is brilliant. And then we've got a local group doing a Mamma Mia set as well, which just always goes down. Yeah, Abbott always goes down well at a party. Yeah.
Brilliant. And this being the farming program, we have some stuff for farmers there.
Very much so. I mean, there's we have our main livestock show on the Sunday, and we've got our biggest ever entry of sheep and cattle. Very proud of that. Yeah, from the sort of huge commercial beef steers down to actually this year we're holding the Midlands regional show for the North Ronaldsay sheep breeders. Yeah, and these things are tiny and they live on seaweed. This is the thing, you know, on North Ronaldsay Island there's a wall that keeps them off the grass and they live on the beach and they live on seaweed. And they've asked us, we want to have a regional show, please come and have it at Heckington, which is brilliant. I think I'm personally really, really proud of is the Lincoln Longwool breeders having their first ever national show, and that is at Heckington. Yeah, so on 28th we'll have the biggest show in the country this year of our native Lincoln Longwools, you know, our own county breed, and the supreme champion will be the national champion Lincoln Longwool, which is really, really exciting. And then we've got, you know, interesting as everything picks up, still picking up again after COVID. We've got the machinery dealers coming back, you know, tractors, forklifts, all those sorts of things. So, a good day out for our farmers.
And you've got some vintage stuff there, plenty of activities. You know, if you look at the family, there's stuff for just about everybody, really, isn't there, at Heckington?
I think it's one of the reasons it's so successful. If you're particularly interested in one of the things that we do, you're not dragging your family along because there's all stuff that they want to see as well. So it's actually, if there's a thing you want to see, it's a good chance to do it because, yeah, at Heckington, there's stuff that everybody's going to enjoy. In fact, next year they're going to be asking you if we're going again. Yeah, which is great.
Excellent. And there is, as with so many of these village shows, a bit of a charity connection, isn't there?
Yeah, so I mean, the show itself is a charity. And I think it's actually, you know, we've been doing quite a lot of chat this year about events struggling, yeah, to survive. Yeah, the climate is challenging, but actually the fact that the show is a charity gives it two huge strengths. Yeah, number one, people will just give so much of their time and what they have. If it's for the show, people are there to do it. It also means we haven't given our money away. We've actually sat on it because more than ever, you need a rainy day fund. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need a rain, yeah, because we're all completely dependent, yeah, on the sun shining on the day. And yeah, and we have enough money behind us. Yeah, like a lot of festivals are closing because they can't sell their tickets, they don't run it. We've got enough money in the bank to carry on next year, whatever happens, which is just brilliant. Yeah, we're a registered charity. That model means that the show itself, which I generally think is a huge asset to the community, not just in the village, but in Lincolnshire as well. It brings so many people together to do so much good stuff. It's just fantastic.
There's a heck of a lot of positivity around it. And of course, the village gets behind it, not just for the show itself, but in decorating so many houses.
I was lucky enough to go to Wimbledon this last week, and the tennis is a thing that is done to the town. Yeah, whereas Heckington Show is a thing the village do to share with others. And actually, just as a resident, just as a citizen, I'm enormously proud of that. Yeah, Heckington's a village that puts itself out to do stuff and wants to share it, which is brilliant. And you say everybody gets into the spirit of it. Like our judges and officials driving in, you know, they go, "This is incredible," because yeah, they come down the high street and there are 10 houses with bunting and scarecrows and all sorts of things. It just gives the whole place, the whole village, a carnival atmosphere. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's quite a sight to see, definitely. So, Charles, just tell us exactly where, when, where can we go for more information?
Yeah, so crucially, when it's always the last full weekend in July, so Saturday the 27th, Sunday the 28th of July this year. It's actually in the heart of Heckington. It's yeah, physically in the village. Get your sat nav to Heckington. Everything's signposted from there. If you want to find out about the event, go to the website heckingtonshow.org.uk. That's it. If you just Google Heckington Show, it will just pop up straight away. But you can find out all about the event, the different things that are on different days as well, because it's almost like 2 one-day shows. Pick your day. Frankly, it's cheaper to come 2 days as well. Just come and enjoy the whole lot.
I wish this was video because the picture of you trying to remember the whole of the website was great. Lovely. Well, look, Charles, I shall see you there. And
Yes.
we're so looking forward to another great Heckington show in just a few days' time. And may you have continued success. Thank you, Charles.
Thanks, Steve.
I'll be there on Saturday. Hope to see you there. To the fields we go now. How are the crops doing? Is there much still to be done before harvest? With some timely agronomy advice, our crop doctor Sean Sparling. Sunshine for the last few days. Plenty of rain last week too. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. I know, another week of extreme weather. I don't know what else we'd talk about this year. 11 degree difference in just a week. Got up to 27.4 with me on Thursday. It was only 16 the Thursday before. And torrential downpours. I mean, I took 21 mil Sunday into Monday. Many people took way more than that. Over 47 mil just 25 miles away from me at Potter Hanworth in the same period. Just 12 mil at North Kelsey, which is only 4 miles away from me. So a wet old lot everywhere. In varying degrees, I think it's fair to say. And that takes me up, incidentally, to 528 mil of rain so far this year. And if you include the rain from last autumn, since the 12th of September when we started drilling, I've taken well over a metre of rain since we started drilling in the middle of September. Typical weather for this time of year now, I'm afraid. The last few seasons, of course, from the end of July and into those first 2 weeks of August, it seems now to be made up of these extreme wet, thundery downpours, just when we need sunshine and warm weather to ripen and finish these crops off and allow us to safely gather them in. No harm done yet, as far as I can see. A bit of spring barley is looking a bit tousled and thrashed about, but that'll pick itself up. It's leaning rather than flat mostly. That drizzly stuff, of course, hanging heavy onto barley at its greenest and heaviest, and then you follow that with the heavy rain. That has been the issue. And as far as I'm aware, no real damage to any oilseed rape in my area, as yet anyway. In the main, most of the oilseed rape still out in the field, but under control. It's hanging on. Still some to be sprayed off, so a few more warm, sunny, dry days and we'll be off. Yields variable as expected where it has been cut. Plenty of gappy fields, of course, where we were left with 20, 23 or 4 acres or so in a field of rape that's a 30-acre field. And that's going to make the 30-acre field average look a bit poor this year, no matter how well it does, thanks to a combination of flea beetle, slugs, wet feet, waterlogging. And because of all that wet stuff last back end and earlier this spring, 3.25 to 3.5 tonnes per hectare is going to be a pretty good result on any rape field, I think. Sugar beet disease, still hard to find. The very first signs of rust and powdery mildew in a few few stressy bits. I always go and look at those stressy areas first, or I look at the odd virusy plant you can find for signs of disease, because they're more likely to be affected while their defences are down, as it were. More downy mildew than I've seen for a year or two in sugar beet. Unsurprising, I suppose, considering it's the same pathotype as potato blight, and the weather's been pretty much perfect for potato blight, as any potato grower will tell you. Hot, humid, thundery. And do remember to report any virus you see to BBRO if you do come across it. There's a bit of bacterial leaf spot out here in the sugar beet. We tend to see a fair bit of that in these cool, wet conditions like we've had since the jet stream decided to park itself off the south coast. Crispy brown edges to the older leaves. Very easy to confuse bacterial leaf spot with virus or Cercospora or even manganese and magnesium deficiency. So if you're in doubt, get your advisor to go out there and tell you precisely what it is. You do not want to be treating for one thing when it's another. There's no treatment for bacterial leaf spot, by the way. So it's an expensive lesson to learn if you go chucking Revistar or Caligula on the crop thinking it's Cercospora, because it'll do the square root of sod all against bacterial leaf spot if that's what it turns out to be. The weather much more conducive, of course, to Cercospora now that it's come hotter, but do keep your eye on the BBRO Cercospora forecasting tool. Any score below a 6 and it's not worth treating. I think Lincolnshire's somewhere between 1 and 2 at most at the moment, so don't panic. I'm thinking that my first fungicides are going to go on probably around early August for me, unless things suddenly change. I'm going to keep monitoring it, obviously, but I'm finding very little disease, as I said, so that's kind of where I'm aiming at. And take the opportunity to maintain levels of magnesium and manganese. It costs pence to do, and there's no need for some of these extravagant bespoke brews of trace elements going in there. Always target the issue and don't waste your money blanket bombing with a product with 20 or 30 nutrients if one or two are going to do. A lot of manganese, magnesium deficiencies out here. Very easy to find. Bits of boron deficiency showing up too. But make sure that if you need to put boron on, it's one of the good mixers. One of the very few. Not many of them are very good mixers. Reports of high numbers of black aphids, incidentally, showing up in one or two beet fields in various areas. The threshold in a poor crop, 10% of plants affected by black aphid. Threshold in good bits, 100 aphids per plant. And with so few options available to us, we used to have things like aphox in sugar beet, which was very effective, very safe to the predators. So, of course, we lost that. So all we really have now are the topiques, the incis, and pyrethroids, which have very limited application allowances. And the topiques and the incis, you may well have already met your maximum permitted doses. Pyrethroids, absolute waste of time on black aphids. And all of these things will damage the predators, of which there are huge numbers, particularly ladybirds in most fields now. So unless you're reaching or exceeding thresholds, do let Mother Nature take a course. The predators will probably do far more good anyway, so let them deal with it if you can. T3's still going on. Spring wheats, as they start to flower in these wet conditions. Spring barley, winter wheat, spring oats, all pretty much done and dusted now up until the glyphosate pre-harvest. Spring beans looking well as well. Two fungicides applied to most crops. You're going to get a good 3 or 4 weeks control of the mildews and the rust and the chocolate spot out of azoxystrobin. So once the pods get to full size, just let that chocolate spot, rust, etc. desiccate the crop for you. There are plenty of pods in the beans and the peas this year. Plenty of beans and peas in those pods, particularly where the crops went in well and hadn't laid too wet, with plenty of fusarium foot rot, incidentally, in the beans and the peas where they didn't go in quite so well. Silver Y moth about again, so do keep your eye on that. It's 5 caterpillars per plant as your threshold, so don't go spraying pyrethroids unless you have no choice but to do so. And remember, all those lovely predators will not survive an application of pyrethroid, and the beet has got an enormous capacity to recover leaf area at this time of year anyway. So harvest and holidays loom large, the weather's taking the mick, the year just keeps on giving, wild oats mostly, so let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks, Sean. Markets and weather on the way, and one of the biggest concerns in farming is our safety record. It's poor, to say the least. Why? What's to be done? Farm Safety Week starts tomorrow. We'll hear from Stephanie Barclay in her yellow wellies next.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
This is the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard. Farming has 1% of the working population, but 16% of the workplace deaths. Why do we have such a poor safety record in farming? Did you know it's that bad? What can we do about it? Farm Safety Week starts tomorrow, and it looks like we need it more than ever. from the Farm Safety Foundation in her yellow wellies, Stephanie Barclay.
Yeah, I mean, Farm Safety Week, what it tries to do is raise awareness of the dangers of working in that industry that we rely on three times a day, but one that, as you rightly said, has the poorest safety record of any occupation in the UK and Ireland.
Why are we so bad?
Well, there are more risks involved in farming than any other industry. And whilst we cannot eliminate the risks completely, we can't make the industry 100% risk-free, but we can minimise them, but we're not. And that's the thing. We are seeing improvements in the industry, but those improvements are not coming fast enough. Not for the people and the families and communities that have lost somebody over the last year.
Are we actually seeing improvements? Because these campaigns have been ongoing for a few years now, and yes, they've been very, very well received. Are they actually coming through into reduced numbers or reduced percentages?
In our target age range of under 40s, yes, there are improvements. But when you think that probably 40% of the farm workers that lose their lives on farms are over the age of 65, and we have an ageing population of farmers. So in that industry and in those in that particular age range, the challenge of complacency, the fact that I've always done it this way, I've never had an accident, it will never happen to me. We know from our own research, actually, that farmers, 88% of farmers tell us that complacency is what is the biggest contributor to having those, continuing to have those accidents. To 82% of them, it's about their attitude. You know, and that is what we're trying to look at this year. We're looking at those attitudes.
By that, do you mean I've kind of always done it this way? I know there's a risk, but I'll be all right.
Yeah, because they're relying on luck. They're, you know, and if you're looking at that sort of near miss thing, I've had near misses, but are they actually looking at a near miss as an opportunity to do it safer the next time? Are they going to continue doing what they did because they've been lucky up till now? And I think that factor in and around luck, especially when they're tired, they're rushing, they're under pressure, they're working on their own, all of those contributory factors that also contribute to why the industry is so at high risk. Those are the things that are making the industry not have those changes that we all need and we all want to see.
Does it sometimes take an accident or, God forbid, a death on a farm to actually wake up the rest of the people on that farm to think we need to change?
There were 23 farm workers killed over the last year. Now, that figure does not include the members of the public, which will be coming out for day one of Farm Safety Week. But if you look at that compared to last year, that figure's gone up. Last year, there were 21 deaths. This year, there was 23. So the figure has actually gone up. Now, that is not what any of us want to see. So it's not putting off. Hearing that somebody dies is not putting off people from taking those risks. So this is why something like Farm Safety Week is so important, because we want to hear from real people, ordinary people who may not have lost somebody, but actually they may have, something may have happened to them that has affected their life, that has changed their life, that has changed the lives of everybody that's living with them. You know, and these are the things that we need to make people be aware that this is a very real danger. You know, our improvements are not coming fast enough. And, you know, there are other things out there that are putting farms at risk each and every day that aren't the big things that we do know about, like animals, like machinery, like vehicles. There are plenty other physical safety issues that, you know, face farmers every single day.
So we're not just talking, as far as Farm Safety Week's concerned, about raising awareness, but changing attitudes as well.
That's what it's all about. It's about the action to change those attitudes. What are you going to do to make that job safer, to make your farm safer for you and anybody else that visits it or lives on it? Because remember, this is the industry where one or two children die every year, and farms are places where people live. They are where families live. They're also places where we can foster a fantastic new generation of future farmers. So we do want to keep the farms safe for the farmers of today, and we want to keep them safe for the farmers of tomorrow.
So awareness, changing attitudes, what
and
are we
action.
Actually and action.
Action.
What
action.
Are we actually going to do during Farm Safety Week?
Okay, so this week we're going to be looking beyond those traditional themes around farm safety, like animals, farm vehicles, etc. We're going to be looking at those attitudes to working safely. We're going to look at attitudes about recording and reporting accidents, thinking about near misses and why it's important for farmers to record or report injuries, what we can learn, because every near miss or every minor injury, is an opportunity for us to learn something about it. Those things actually don't cost money, because there are a lot of free or, you know, affordable solutions out there which we can adopt. Things like what three words, you know, we all need to have that on our phones. That's a one simple thing that can keep people safer. Knowing what the number is for overhead power lines, 105, we have just, for in terms of our contribution to it, we are launching the Little Book of Farm Safety that will run alongside the Little Book of Minding Your Head. And I've finished writing it. It's just back from the printers today. It's something that is a pocket-sized book, gives you all of that quick information that is written very simply, that is easy to digest, but also can take you through to other areas that you, if you want to learn more about it. Very easy, digestible, and this will be free of charge to anybody that wants a copy of it. The same as we've done with the 36,000 copies of my Little Book of Minding Your Head that we have out there. We're going to do the same with the Little Book of Farm Safety. We're going to hear from other people who have been doing things to drive those behaviours, because there are people working behind the scenes and under the radar that we just don't know about. So we're trying to bring them all together to shout about what is out there, how we're all helping each other, and what we can do to drive that action. And that is the thing that we need to do. We need to take action.
What do you want farmers to do? You know, we're raising awareness, we're spreading the word, you're trying to change people's attitudes. Farmers listening to this programme right now, what do you want them to do during that week?
Basically, we want farmers, anybody that's working in the industry, to just stop and take note of what there is around them. Even look at the one thing on that farm on that day, every single day, that they can actually look at and go, right, if there's going to be an accident on the farm today, what's the most likely reason for it? And what can you do right now to make it safe? You know, you're taking that one risk, that one hazard out of the equation every single day. As I said, we can't make our farms 100% risk-free. But isn't it good? We can't do anything if we don't try. We need to all try to do something individually to do our best to make the industry free of risk for not just ourselves, our workers, our families, and anybody that's coming onto the farm.
I can't remember who it was now who said, if you keep doing the same thing and expecting different results, there lies insanity. I can't remember who said it now, but yeah. We've got to change what we do. Do you actually want to hear from farmers during the week?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We know there are people who have reached out to us. We will be sharing different stories, but we want to hear from farmers. We want people to be taking to their social media to share their stories. Tag us in it, because if you tag us in at Yellow Wellies UK and what you're talking about, we will get it out to a bigger audience. And that's what we want to do. We want real farmers listen to real farmers. You know, shoes on the carpet should never tell boots on the ground what to do. And we will never do that. You know, so what we want to hear is the real farmer stories, and the real farmers will learn from each other. And that's it. It will be about peer-to-peer training and peer-to-peer conversations. That is what the whole week is about. It's our industry. It's our responsibility. So we need to take stock of that.
So social media, hashtags, websites, etc. Yep. Where do we go for more information? Where do we go to find out all this stuff?
Okay, well, you can follow at Yellow Wellies UK on Instagram, Facebook and X, and like and share our content or post your own using the hashtag Farm Safety Week. Throughout the week, we're going to be uploading blogs, articles and advice on our website, which is yellowwellies.org. We're very accessible. We're on social media, so we're very sociable. We want to hear from people. We want to share your stories, because this is your industry. You know, this is your safety record, you know, and we want to help you improve it.
And we'll be spreading the word on ours as well, at Farming Show. Just remind us of the dates, Stephanie.
It's Monday the 22nd until Friday the 26th. There will be so much information. You will be glad it was only going to be a 5-day week.
And I think the other key thing to say this is, of course, Farm Safety Week is so important, but that's just 1 week out of 52, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we do this as the Farm Safety Foundation. We do this every day of the year, but this is the 1 week that the whole industry can actually get together. You know, we're a small charity. We can't do it on our own. We have 400 different partner organisations from across the UK and Ireland, you know, joining together for this 1 week to drive that change. And actually, you know, when those voices do join together, that's when that change can happen.
I wish you well. I hope it's a successful week. And I hope it, this time in a year, we're maybe sat here with some different numbers.
Oh, we can only hope. As you said, if you continue doing what you've always done, you'll get the results you've always got.
Wouldn't it be nice one day if you're out of a job, really? You know, if you didn't actually need to do your job, wouldn't it?
That is my goal. One day that I will not be needed and I'll have to go and get another job. So watch out, Steve.
Stephanie, let's hope it's a good week. Let's hope it's effective, which I'm sure it will be. And let's hope the results start heading in the right direction. Stephanie Barclay, thank you for joining us on the Farming Programme again.
Thanks as always, Steve. Thank you.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting as usual with livestock from Louth Market auctioneer Edward Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. An absolutely excellent entry of prime cattle this week in terms of quality and numbers. All steers this week, and the top price in the pence per kilo came from a joint top price, actually, from J&S Brooks of Strubby and F. Wallace and Son of Biscathorpe at £311.5. Top price pounds per head came from GL and M. Carr of Louth with a 650 kilo limousin steer, equating to £1,940.25. Moving on to the sheep, we had a very good SQQ this week at 313.82 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of £136.21. The top spot in the lambs this week came from Shaw Brothers of Binbrook at £161 for a super pen of 53.5 kilo heavyweight Charolais cross lambs in the pence per kilo. EJ Benj of Horsington topped at 357 pence per kilo or £150 for a 42 kilo blue Texel with other pens at 346 and 328 pence per kilo. Moving on to the cull ewes this week, an increased average of £114.68. Top spot went to Shaw Brothers of Binbrook for a marvellous pen of Suffolk ewes at 171. Just a few store lambs this week with an average of £98.57, topping for £106 for IWH Burks of Osgoby. A reminder, we're taking entries for Partney Fair sheep sale on Friday the 2nd of August for store lambs and breeding sheep and also breeding rams. Entries are being taken now. Please do not hesitate to give me a call for any entries you might have. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Edward. And with a look at the week in grain, Open Fields' Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. While the July USDA report has come and gone, with numbers published late last Friday evening, it has left a trail of destruction in its wake. Some of the numbers are forecasted numbers, and ambitious ones at that, but you can't escape the fact that they are the figures that are being traded. Despite the record fund short the US is already seeing, it has still come down some more. Some of the headlines. The US wheat crop had its yield increased from 49.4 bushels per acre to 51.8. Their area has also increased as they found another 3.64 million tonnes of wheat to play with. Around the world, everything was left virtually unchanged. UK wheat is pegged at 10.85 million tonnes, and Russia and Ukraine still at 83 and 19.5 million tonnes, respectively. Corn production in the US moved up also, 6.1 million tonnes, due to another 1.3 million acres being planted. After a £4.50 drop in the market on Monday, the rest of the week has been a much quieter affair. Is there an appetite to go lower? You can hedge any sales you make with futures, but at some point you're going to have to buy the physical product, and as you can imagine, not everyone is queuing up to sell today. It feels odd that we've been talking about the same thing for a few weeks now. Chartists would argue that having broken away from the 200 NOV mark, that the next move is down and not up. But the truth is, most of the trade are now waiting to see what the new crop actually looks like, so we can stop having a guess and trade some physical grain. If Mother Nature would allow, then I'm sure many of us would already be having a good go. Some mixed messages so far from what I can see. Time will tell with the coming EU harvest, with the bloc's biggest exporter, France, now suggesting yields will be down over 15% and the smallest since 2020 at 29.7 million tonnes. Remember also that the USDA have pitched the UK wheat production at 10.85 million tonnes, which most UK analysts believe to be too high. Some kinder weather and we'll start to see what the early barleys look like. It's still very early days so far. What I think we will continue to see though is some big swings in prices. A £5 movement in a week used to be an event. Now this can happen by lunchtime on a Monday. I find it hard to believe that we're going to be trading at these numbers for the next 12 months in a flat line. We'll need to be alive to them, but there will be opportunities. We discussed rapeseed when it was going up, so we must now show some balance and report when it's come down too. Another example of the volatility that we are having to get used to. A drop in soybeans, which are now trading at a four-year low, lower Canadian canola with better weather and a slightly lower crude oil price has equated to a 42 euro drop in just six trading days. Extraordinary. And we know that the EU, like the UK, will be big importers of rapeseed once again this year. So, some guide prices for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, July 175 to 185, September 180 to 190, November 185 to 195, with Group 1 milling premium still holding 60 to 70 pounds. Feed barley, September 150 to 160, November 155 to 165, and oilseed rape, September 370 to 380, and November 380 to 390. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
A bit cooler than the last few days, but still a mostly dry, mostly calm week. Plenty of patchy sunshine and daytime highs around 20. Have you diversified your farm? We're running a diversification special in a couple of weeks, and I would love to hear your story. What did you do? How did you do it? What went well? What didn't? Share your experience of diversification on farm. Drop me a message on X, Twitter, at Farming Show, or email steve@linksfm.co.uk and I'll give you a call. I'm Steve Orchard. Until the next Farming Programme podcast with the Week in Agriculture, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.